Welcome back to Coast AM. It is Friday night. Open lines for the next 2 hours. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. I want to remind everybody that tomorrow I will be at the 2015 MUFON Symposium. That's tomorrow night in Irvine, California at the Hotel Irvine. Come on down, hang out. The cast and crew for Hangar One, the UFO Files on History Channel will all be there. I'll be hosting. Just come on down and hang out. It's going to be a great time. Open lines for the rest of the night. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. What do you want to talk about? The end of the world? A little bit of ufology? Have you had a sighting this week? Anything sneak around in your room in the dark? It's all on the table. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. More on Coast to Coast when we come back. Stay with us. Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, standing in for George tonight. Let's go straight to the phones. We're going to be doing this for the next 2 hours. Rob in Culver City, California. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, Jimmy. How are you?
I'm doing good, Rob. What's on your mind?
I've been noticing that there's just a lot of information that's coming out. We have situations right now where we've got people like Corey Good coming out with just really far-flung stories about potential breakaway societies and civilizations. And then we've got more tame things coming from whistleblowers. And, you know, the traditional mask of disinformation is to release a little bit of pertinent information and bury it in a bunch of stuff that's just not true. But that's usually delivered in an organized manner by people that are pulling the puppet strings. But it seems like there's so much information coming from so many different sources that has all of the earmarks of disinformation type campaigns, but it's coming from such a diverse group of people, and the stories are varying so much that it's hard to interpret it as misinformation. And so I'm just wondering what you guys think about the stuff that's coming out, how it's coming out, and what we should really make of some of the things that we're hearing.
Well, you know, we have to, and thank you, Ron, for the call. And the question, the point is with all of this, is you have to connect some dots. You have to look at what is in front of you. You bring up Corey and his revelations lately, and I've spoken to Corey about this, and I think he's been on Coast just recently too. But some of his information is very similar to what was going on with Gary McKinnon and the Space Federation and the fact that we had a secret space program going on. And we know that there's something going on Mars. We know that there's something going on the moon and the far side of the moon. We know these things. And, you know, it's how much of it can be backed up. Well, maybe none of it, but the stories seem to be, the experiences seem to be similar. So what I say to everybody is you have to listen to all whistleblowers. You have to listen to anybody that comes forward and then go and research yourself beyond that to try to figure out what is real and what is not. Because if we go back to, this is kind of a long answer, but we have to look at what history says to us with Paul Benowitz and Richard Doty and William Moore and some of the things that happened with Linda Moulton Howe that were very strange stories, but turn out to be massive disinfo campaigns right in front of us. You know, with the MJ-12 documents, what is real and what is not, and who produced those, and what was going on out at Kirkland Air Force Base, and all of these things. Well, it turned out a majority of it was a massive disinfo campaign interdispersed with some facts and some reality, too. And it's a good way to just throw us all off of the scent.
You know, that's what happens with organized disinformation, is that you get stuff where there's a little bit of nuggets of truth combined with a bunch of stuff that's completely untrue, and that's usually delivered in an organized manner by people with a motive. But the information that we're getting now is the same thing. And, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I'm craving something definitive. It's time that we get some information that we don't have to say, well, take what resonates with you and leave the rest. You know, there's only really one definitive truth, but we're getting hit with hundreds of different variations. And, you know, unless you start bringing in the nature of reality and how things are completely different for different people, how is it advancing the cause?
Well, that's exactly right. But when you say something definitive, Ron, I have to just say very clearly, when you have hundreds of thousands of photographs and images and witness testimony and radar data and military disclosures and airline pilots and astronauts and presidents for that matter, that is, it's just so extraordinarily large in front of us, then that's what I consider definitive. And the only thing that is more definitive than that is the proverbial UFO flying saucer on the White House lawn. And I don't know if it's necessary. Yeah, I don't know if it's necessarily going to come that way. And I don't know even if we need that. I think we need to move on and look at what is around us now. You know, what is it that we have now? We can't just continue to say we need this. We need a video that shows rivets on the side of a UFO. We need ET to wave at us through a window. I think we already have that. I don't think there's any question about it. I think we need to move forward with the mindset of they're already here. We've already been visited. We already have definitive everything.
Well, we're being bombarded now with a variety of different contactees, and they all tell a slightly different story, and some of them tell wildly different stories. And so, you know, it really makes it difficult to discern what's going on. And you'd think that right now the evidence would be mounting and the truth would be getting clearer, but it seems to be getting more and more distorted.
Sure, sure. But we only need one. We have Travis Walton. We only need one. You know, and we have that, just like we would only need a flying saucer on the White House lawn once. So when it comes to contactees, we have our guy. You know, we have our guy. We have our Michael Jordan of contactees, and it's Travis Walton. So I understand exactly what you're saying, though. I would love to have something, but I've had my eyewitness stuff myself. I've had my sightings. So I don't need to question that or whose sighting is more valid than the next. I've already had that myself, so I can push that aside. You know, so what is it? I would love some crazy video to show up. I would love to have something land on the 405 freeway out here in Santa Monica. But I don't think that we need that. It would be great, but I think all the definitive stuff that we need to collect is already there. Thank you for the call, Ron. Let's go to, let's see, who's holding the longest? Let's go to Casper, first-time caller, Great Lakes, Michigan. Casper, welcome to Coast AM.
Hey, Jimmy. Good to hear you. Good with your going. Great show, great questions, great answers.
He's the best.
He is the best, and he is the face of ufology today. I mean, you know, him, Dwight, and quite a few others, and Paul Hellyer, I can't pronounce it right, I'm sorry.
Hellyer.
Right, Department of Defense retiree from Canada there. You know, there's some people, disclosures already occurred as far as a lot of people are concerned. It's a matter of accepting it. But then there's that, you know, can we force a smoking gun? You know, can something away from the government, like citizens, force something? And, you know, I suppose it's possible, you know, that we could force something, you know, to happen. You know, maybe make, you know, a plea call saying, well, you know, we know, and then you're tearing us up down here. You know, just present yourselves and let's get it on.
Casper, let me ask you this, and it's an interesting point, but when you say force, what are you referring to, and what would the goal be?
Well, you know, it's not like forcing it. It's not like you could run into Area 51 and see something because you never get out alive. you know, that's not going to happen. But to try as a society to force disclosure, if our government isn't willing to do it, and governments around the world to start raising our voices skyward, saying, you know, we have enough evidence, you know, forget these people, you know, they claim to be our leaders, but, you know, show yourselves, enough's enough.
Well, if disclosure happens, how would you want it to happen? Would you want some event in Washington, D.C., some craft over the Capitol building? Or would you, want it from another source, be it videotape, a captured E.T. maybe paraded in the middle of Times Square. How would you want it to happen?
Well, we don't need any more videotapes. You don't need any more photographs, because those can all be hoaxed. You know, we need some hardcore physical evidence, whether it's a UFO landing on the White House lawn. That would probably have to be prearranged, because it gets shot down when it got so close, provided it was detected, you know, coming in. But once it landed, it would still be surrounded unless it was prearranged. But we need a physical contact, whether it's the White House, you know, Central Park in New York, Perth, Australia, somewhere, you know, or Toronto, wherever in the world. You know, I think we need to have you know, disclosure occur. The thing is, you know, all the religions around the world are going to be thrown into upside down. Without a doubt, I mean, there's going to be an aftermath of, you know, with religions around the world, you know, that's going to be, you know, could get bloody, you know.
Well, do you think, Casper, and thank you for the call, do you think that we're ready for it? You know, is there going to be anarchy in the streets, or are we just going to sit back and go, cool, we knew it all along, and let's move on. Now that we've gotten it out of the way, we can worry about other things. How do you think the attitude will be in the streets?
I think that you'll see the Arab nations kind of reject it and call it demonic. I think in the United States, Canada, Australia, you know, the European Union, you might see some firebombings of some churches, maybe. But overall, I think that, you know, what people consider the free world, if you still want to call it that, I think the vast majority of people can handle it at this point in time. You know, and a lot of religious leaders are prepared. You have to think, too, that this pope is considered a scientist by many. And to have a pope retire is unheard of. And this guy comes in and he's a scientist. So he's a good candidate to be the Pope when disclosure occurs. You know, whether that's an actual conspiracy or not, who really knows? But I think that the United States and other civilized parts of the world can handle it. I think you'll see some isolated problems, but overall, I think it'll in the United States, Canada, Australia, European Union countries, I think it'll be fine. Even in Russia, I don't think we'll have a real issue.
So you think you think we're ready, and I do too. And I thank you for that. Thank you for the call, Casper. You have a great, safe rest of your evening. Let's go to Miles, wild card line up in Seattle, Washington. Miles, welcome to Coast AM.
Thank you, Jimmy.
What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I'll change the subject a little bit. We know aliens are there. I mean, debate stupid, that's my point. But I had an experience when I was about 7 years old. I was laying in my bed and I just had a glass of water and I saw this like gold sparkly creature, like sparkle like gold, walk in my room and went right through the closet. I don't know what it was. Like, I never heard anybody hear about it before. Do you know anything about that? Or
well, tell me a little more. Were you dreaming? Were you asleep? Were you wide awake? Were the lights off?
Yeah, I was wide awake. It was about 11 o'clock at night. I was wide awake. I just saw it. And it was about 6 foot high, and it had, like, really skinny arms. It looked like kind of like a bird-like creature. It was, like, sparkling gold, like gold coin. Like, it was kind of like godlike. I don't know what it was, though.
Do you think there was any communication between the two of you? Did you try to talk? Did you try to say anything? And were you scared?
Yeah, I was really scared. I saw it, but
did you try to talk? Did you try to talk or communicate?
I know I was too scared to talk, but like it felt like an ancestor. I don't know. It was like really weird. It was like kind of like a royal figure, like
right,
like sparkly gold. Like I don't know what it was, though, man.
And what about, could you move?
Yeah, I could move too. Like, I stood on my bed, you know, but it was just really weird.
And how long did it last, Miles?
About 5 minutes.
And at the end of this, so there was no communication, so you guys had a little standoff, I guess, right? You guys are looking at each other.
Just staring at me, yeah.
How did it end?
It walked right through the wall, and I never saw it again.
And never came back, no other interaction.
No.
And what do you, I'll give you my opinion here in a second, because I find it fascinating, and I had an experience, not quite the same, but very similar. But what do you think? What do you think it was?
I have no idea. So I was trying to ask, like, but I don't know, man. It's really weird. Like,
well, I find it interesting that you said bird.
Yeah.
You know, it had had bird features, and if you think about some of the images of different gods from ancient Egypt with bird heads and that representation, and then you go and read a couple of there's some really great books out there, and one that comes to mind is Rendezvous with Rama with Arthur C. Clarke, and that leader was a human body with a bird head, and you see those references throughout history. And I just find that interesting. I really, really do. I find that interesting. But you
like
didn't.
When it left, like, you could see the gold trail, like the sparkles fall off it. It was really weird.
Mm-hmm. And you didn't feel threatened, though.
No, it felt like an ancestor, like a royal, like, it felt like a king of some creature. I don't know what it was. But
right.
Hell, it was like a Jesus-like creature. Like, I don't know what it was, though.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah
fantastic. You know what? Just as long as you weren't scared, then you witness something, and it could have been interdimensional. It could have been from something that what I mean to say is when you walking through walls, that wall probably wasn't there for them. You saw it walk through a wall, but if it was, you know, interdimensional and was running at another frequency, then that wall wasn't even there. So you need to look at it like that, too. But a very interesting story. And I have to tell you, just as long as you weren't scared, you should maybe curl up one night and say, come back. Why not?
Yeah, I know.
You know? Miles, yeah. Thank you for the call. Absolutely fascinating. And you have a great, safe rest of your evening. Let's go to who's holding the longest here. Let's go to East of the Rockies, C in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Welcome to Coast AM. How are you tonight?
Not bad, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic because I'm talking to you, C. How you doing?
Not bad. I just have a comment question. About 3 months ago, I seen something gigantic in the sky, what you were talking about. I think earlier, these giant ships, and I'm just wondering, because you didn't really go into detail about them. It was like a... I turned my head over my backyard.
See, let me jump in. We have about 30 seconds, so give it to me really quick.
Okay, it was gigantic, maybe a rectangular in the back with rows of lights. And what I noticed was it was huge, no noise. I went to go get a phone to take a picture, and by the time 20 seconds turned my head, it was just gone. Three rows of lights, different colors, blinking, kind of pointed in the front. Just wondering if other people have seen these giant things. Ships or whatever.
See, I hear this.
Goes along with it.
I hear this all the time, and thank you for the call. I'll say this. I have a friend here. He's the CEO of a company here in Southern California, and he told me nearly the exact same story that he witnessed right over Southern California in Los Angeles. The size of an aircraft carrier, rows of lights, absolutely huge. Came and went in the clouds with multiple witnesses. This is Coast to Coast AM, taking your calls. It's Friday night for the rest of the evening. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, and I'll be back right after this. Stay with us. Welcome back. It is Friday. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I am your host, Jimmy Church, standing in for George Norrie tonight. We'll be taking your calls for the rest of the evening. I want to know, have you seen something lately? Something strange in the sky. The Pope was just here. Was there a secret message? Look what happened this morning with Boehner. What is going on out there? I want to know what goes bump in the night. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Taking your calls. Frank in Hollywood, you're up next. Welcome back to Coast AM. Let's go straight back to the phones. Frank, wild card, Hollywood, Maryland. Frank, welcome to Coast. What's on your mind? Frank, okay, let's go to Wildcard Terry, Freeport, Louisiana. Terry, welcome to Coast AM.
Yeah, hello, Jimmy. I wanted to give you a call, see if somebody could help me out with a phenomena I've seen twice about a month apart, and wanted to describe that to you and see if your guest can help or you can help.
Okay, was this in Louisiana?
No, actually, it was down by Seguin, Texas, on Highway 123. I had down where I was living about 9 years ago. me and my wife had gotten up about a half an hour after sunrise, and we're headed out with a pickup and a car trailer to up to East Texas. But about 3 miles from the farm on Highway 123, we both witnessed a very black looking object that moved across the highway from left to right at doing about 10 mile an hour, and then which was a change in shapes, and it was about the size of a tractor trailer.
Interesting. How long did it last?
Well, it was we were moving at about 65 mile an hour, and we watched it cross the highway out up ahead of us, in front of us, which was about 300 to 400, maybe 800 yards, something like that. And it lasted probably about 4 to 5 minutes, just watching it go off and then over a hill and then just disappeared. And but it was such a deep black, blacker than it was pitch. I mean, bright daylight. Like I said, the sun been up half hour, and the object was blacker than looking up at a unlit moonlight sky.
Terry, what was your first reaction when you saw it? What did you think, us or them?
Well, the first thing I told my wife, I said, "Are you seeing what I'm seeing?" And she goes, "Yeah, I'm seeing what you're seeing. It's whatever that is. It's, you know," she goes, "it feels." She said, first thing she felt like it was some type of intelligence, and felt you know, it was like it was just pure evil going across the highway. But the second sighting of this object was, we were coming back the other direction about 3.5 weeks later after we picked our daughter up from school in the afternoon. It was about an hour before dusk, and in the same area, but about 2 miles further up the highway, we were following a tractor trailer and doing about 70 mile an hour. And all of a sudden, we thought a tire had flown off the tractor trailer. We saw this thing come spinning off the back, looked like off the truck in front of us, which was about probably 10 truck lengths ahead. And so started to hit the brake. And it's me again with my wife and my 14-year-old daughter, and we all of a sudden, what we thought was a tire actually spun into that object that we had seen before, and then it took a shape that was about the length of the truck, and it was moving alongside the tractor trailer at 70 mile an hour for a distance of probably a mile, and then it moved off to the left at about 5 to 8 mile an hour. We watched it move over a hill, and then it just accelerated at unknown speed and up and out and gone.
Interesting. Well, Terry, it sounds like this is an example of a technology that we have borrowed. You know, it sounds like a technology that we may not recognize when we see it, but it is something that is in possession of our government. And you were seeing some type of experimental craft, because it was close to the ground. Nothing went up into the sky and out of the atmosphere, but it was in the same general area. And it just sounds like that craft was being tested. And also the deep black description, you know, stealth technology, stealth paint is something else that comes to mind. And you were just seeing something that was able to cloak itself, change its shape. And it could have also been some type of experimental drone, because it was so close to the ground too as well. An example of our technology and theirs combined. That's what it sounds to me, and I think that is a great, great eyewitness account. Thank you for the call, Terry. Amazing. Let's go to who's on hold the longest. Let's go to Brian, west of the Rockies in Meridian, Idaho. Brian, welcome to Coast AM. How are you tonight?
Oh, Jimmy, what a treat. Certainly wish I were down in Irvine.
Well, I'll be there tomorrow.
I've read a few books from Zachariah Sitchin and the Colburn Bible, and they're very matching on this planet that comes around every 3,600 years.
Mm-hmm.
And have you read any about that?
I've read a lot of Sitchin. I've read big chunks of the Colburn Bible, too, as well, which I still find fascinating.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
Well, it's a good read, if nothing else. You know, it's an absolutely good read. Well, let me throw it back to you, Brian. What do you think?
Well, the plagues of Egypt are related to when this planet comes around. It disrupts the gravity of our Earth. It shakes up the volcanoes. It causes earthquakes. Supposedly, little meteorites come down and start the forests on fire, cause horrible forest fires, the possibility of turning the Earth on its axis from north to south.
Well,
the stories between Sitchin and the Colburn Bible are somewhat matching. It's eerie.
Well, what I find more interesting than that, if you look at Sitchin's descriptions and the Colburn Bible and other accounts of a Nibiru Planet X, is some of the admissions that have come out of NASA and different astronomers and observatories around that have seen things too as well. And it just makes you stop and wonder. Maybe there is something to this because it is fantastical beyond fantastical. The thought
I'm glad to hear that you've read it because it's hard talking to people about it unless they know what I'm talking about.
Well, Sitchin is one of the most read authors and researchers on this and the Anunnaki and Planet X and Nibiru. So no, I'm not the only one and you're not the only one, but I said, it's when you go a little bit further and you see some of the official government agencies, making direct reference to the possibility of a Planet X being out there and they've been observing it. That's what I find interesting. And then you go back and you have to read Sitchin again and wonder how accurate it actually is. Brian, thank you for the call. Excellent call. Excellent call. Let's go to John, Wild Card John in Mojave, California. John, how are you tonight? Welcome to Coast AM.
Yeah, Mojave, California, the new Area 51. That's what we are here.
Yes, you are, sir.
Yeah. Say, a couple of things that I'd like to share with you. One is I met Harold Dahl in Tenino, Washington, when I was living up there, and he had Harold Dahl is the one who reported the Murray Island. Okay. And I got to speak with him because I found his name in a book. So my dad set up a meeting with him, and I asked him some questions. And the man was seriously scared. He mentioned the men in black had come to him and told him to keep his mouth shut, basically, and not say anything to anybody about the incident. But more importantly, Jimmy, my dad met with Nikola Tesla in the 1930s. My dad was an electronic engineer, and personally, I didn't fall too far from the tree, and I'm also that way. And Tesla made the statements that if you wanted to understand the universe, you needed to understand energy, frequency, and vibration. And I found that to be extremely true with laser lights, and laser frequency has the energy, the frequency, and the vibration. And I believe that UFOs are flown with laser light frequencies, and the design of the ship is very important to controlling the frequencies and making the magnetic lines of force around the exterior part of the ship. It's also, to me, developed out of material that is translucent, which means that the laser lights from the inside make it so that the light on the outside does not reflect off the ship, and that's why the human eye can't see them.
Well, that would also explain why they would appear and disappear very quickly, wouldn't it?
Yes, they blink in and blink out.
It wouldn't necessarily be interdimensional. It would just be on another frequency and vibration.
That's about right. You know, in 1969, after midnight, two guys came to my door, and I was sleeping, and I was very tired because I'd been up all day and drove half the night to see my parents. And they came to the door and said, John. And I said, you guys need to have something very important on your mind because I just went to bed and I'm very tired. And they said, well, we have a UFO parked outside of your house, your dad's house. And I said, okay. I said, where at? And they said, between the chicken coop and the shop. And I said, you know, that's parked right in the trees. How does that work? And they said, well, because it's halfway between here and there. And so I went out. I'm trying to shorten this story up for you, but it gets long. But I went out to the ship, and we went up into it. And just as you go inside, one guy on my left said, now, what do you think that is? And I said, well, those look like crystals. And he said, they are. So we went up to the top deck and looked down on those crystals. And they're rather large. They're around 6 foot in diameter and faceted. And they told me, I said, what are those things going down into it? And he said, those are fiber optics from high-powered lasers up above in the deck. And so we went up there and seen the control room. In 1969, I didn't know what a computer was. I didn't know what a flat screen was, but that's what they had in the control room. And they would program it from there. And depending on how they shot the lasers into the crystals would create amplification and the energy, the frequency, and the vibration inside the chamber. And they could control that and make the ship disappear, or what you call demolecularize.
Hmm. You know what it sounds? Okay, so you're saying that this wasn't ET, that this was our own Air Force. This was our own craft.
Yes, I'm saying that, yes, and in order to put one together, the crystals are so heavy they would weigh, 50 tons, because they're huge, but in space, they're weightless.
Sounds very familiar to Mark McCandless's, accounts of, the alien reproduction vehicle, the ARV, and he was a guest of ours on Coast to Coast a couple of weeks ago, and down to the fiber optics that you're describing, the upper deck, and it sounds like something that we have been testing with the Air Force and flying around for quite a long time. Very interesting. And did you ask if are you guys with our Air Force? Did you have any kind of conversation with these pilots?
Well, yeah, there was actually five of them in the control room. Only two of them were out of the ship with me and then brought me in there. But they said that our military, and this is 1969, was very close to developing the control mechanism to control the lasers, because they're very difficult to control. You can't do it with a stick. You can't fly it like an aircraft. It has to be computer controlled.
Very interesting. Hey John, before I let you go, you're out of Mojave. A lot of secret stuff going out there. I've seen stuff fly around out there myself. Mm-hmm. Do you see stuff daily, strange things in the sky?
Well, no, I don't. Actually, I've been working for the last 3 years on a video that I'm actually burning tonight, and that's why I'm calling you, because I'm finalizing it so that I can explain what I'm trying to tell you right now. It's how difficult it is, and it takes a lot of time, and so I put it in a video form, and then I will be able to release it here in the next month or two.
Fantastic, John. Thank you for the call, and you be safe for the rest of the evening here. Thank you, John. Let's go to who's holding the longest. Wild card 5. Let's go to Craig in Kansas City.
Well, hello, Jimmy.
How are you, Craig?
Doing real well. Let's talk a little about these UFOs.
Let's.
All right. Number one. Richard D. Rosa put together an article that he put in the Analog Science Fact Reader called How to Build a Flying Saucer.
Yes.
In there, he talks about the fact that you can ionize air in an annular well that's in the center of the vehicle. That air then heats up and goes through the well and causes thrust. Now, the problem with that is that there, you have to have some fairly substantial batteries. So the next question now is, with ion-type batteries, if that's a possibility now. So that would be an explanation for flying saucers and how they would fly. Now, these things would be small. They wouldn't be a large craft. They would be a transport aircraft that would go to orbit. Now, the next question, whatever happened to Ed Grimsley?
Yeah, that's a good question. I haven't heard.
No, Ed Grimsley was a big thing here on coast for quite a while.
Well, I know I saw Ed. I saw Ed about five months ago.
But we never hear anything from Ed anymore. And it's interesting to find. It would be interesting to find out. Now, our friend Richard C. of EnterpriseMission.com. Put together an article again for Analog Science Fact, Science Fiction, in which he described the blip in the B-ring, which was a large object in the rings of Saturn that was producing a lot of radio emissions, and I wanted to find out if he was still following that. The next thing is, you had Nick Redfern on here three days ago. And my question to him is, has there been any more follow-up on his studies in the book Body Snatchers in the Desert? That was a very interesting read. In fact, it was kind of a scary read. You get a chance, it's called Body Snatchers in the Desert,
mm-hmm.
in which he documents what happened in the desert in Arizona and New Mexico. So that would be a book you might want to read.
Well, thank you for the call, Craig. And the next time that I see Nick, I will pass that on to him. I find one thing interesting about Craig's call, which is man-made UFOs and stuff that is actually manufactured here, whether it is to emulate what we have been seeing, possible German technology as well, just things that you see. So if you see it and you know that it is then possible, so then we turn around and try to manufacture a version of what we are seeing. And we can go to the Avro car. That's an example. We can talk about Mark McCandlish. We can talk about the ionization engine with batteries. All of this is because this is something that we have seen, and we know if it flies and is shaped like that we can do it ourselves. This is Jimmy Church. This is Coast to Coast AM. More of your calls right after this short break. Stay with us.